to that analysis by the fact of the impact of what Imam Khomeini actually made on the whole world. And as we say, it is about claims. Now, I'd like to start today's discussion with Dr. Hassani on the basis that it says in the Holy Quran that why do you people make claims that they never... God says to us that why do you make claims that you never live up to? And yet, there were claims in the past in terms of the monarchy that was there in Iran where certain kings became shadows of God as claims. And how ridiculous was that? Tell us, Dr. Hassani, put that into some kind of context, that if that was the system by which people had to live, what were we going to expect? Especially on the basis of Tawheed, when we are supposed to be say, Laysa kamithli shay, that God is nothing like his creation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Again, my answer to you in one word, hallucinating.
Right, they were hallucinating, weren't
when
they?
You think you're big.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the characteristic for...
Just simply came out of vanity.
I'll give it to you. The way Quran is teaching us, the Satan went wrong. Why? Because he thought he was big.
Yeah, he became
and this
conceited.
Is the whole, he was deceived, and he tried to deceive everybody else in between.
Yeah.
The thing is this.
He was full of himself.
Of course he was. And this is an enlightened note. If you get into that, he was something more than you could expect, because he was challenging his own creator in a negative sense.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely.
We might get
because,
into that.
Because he had become proud.
Exactly. The thing is this. If you're not big, according
yes.
to according to the definition, how can you become big? Let me give you an example. In mathematics, what is the value of zero?
Zero.
Zero.
Nothing.
Zip.
Zip.
Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
But if you put a zero after a one, what happens?
Becomes 10.
Becomes 10.
Yeah.
10 times.
Times.
You can't say 10 times bigger.
No.
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 You see?
No, you can't do that. This, that doesn't work in math.
Think about this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because no matter what kind of number in math, you know, multiplied by zero is zero.
Zero.
But when you put a zero next to a one.
One.
It becomes 10. And if you put two zeros,
it's 100.
100. And the story goes on.
But the one is very important.
And that one is the oneness that the Tawheed we're talking about.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
So Satan, just like everybody else, just like everything else.
Was
let's
zero.
Let's start simple here. He was zero.
He was zero.
And he will stay zero if he did not seek a place.
With the one.
When we are escaping from devil's trick, we are told to say, I seek refuge in God.
God.
From
in the one.
In the one.
In the one.
And one is one, no matter what. One is the creator. Okay?
Marshall. Yes, that's absolutely right.
So, the thing is this. The arrogance, and this goes with politics today. We might
absolutely.
Get to that. We
yeah.
should.
Yeah, we should.
Satan was nothing. He didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to look for greatness, bigness, which could give him all the respect, all the reward he could not even
imagine,
possibly imagine. He didn't. He went astray. He went out of the way, out of order, which is the law, the do's and don'ts of what Creator put in place. He didn't. So he wasn't big, but he pretended. Okay?
Yes.
This is the word istikbar. Istikbar, you know, the whole claim is this, Brother Ejaz. I might, you know, I'm not trying to jump from here and there, but
no.
It's so many beautiful and different subjects attaching with the life of Imam Khomeini.
Exactly.
May his holy soul rest in peace.
Peace, yes.
It's so many different things that sometimes you feel, you know, you get so excited.
Yeah.
You want to say the whole thing in one session.
In one
that's
breath,
impossible.
But that's not possible. But that's what I was saying in the previous program. I was saying about the fact that this is the extraordinary thing about Imam Khomeini, because this is what we're really talking about, is the fact that he's multidimensional. He's not a one-dimensional
exactly.
man. So that's what we're saying. And what makes him that multidimensional man? Because as you say, there was a claim right in the dawn of time or before the dawn of time, I should say, because we are really into the realms of the creator here. But at that particular moment, this zero, as you said, had a big claim, but was proved to be zero at the end of the day once it was found out that he had got too big for his shoes and couldn't live up to what he was. So at the end of the day, that's what we're saying, that isn't that the sad history, isn't that the misfortune that the Muslim world has been going through?
Exactly.
That we've had people who, as you say, like Satan, came up with big claims out of vanity, out of pride, and so was the Shah.
Out of emptiness,
made a lot of noise, but at the end of the day...
To finish the point about Satan, Brother Hijaz, is to say this.
Mm.
He was nothing, but he wanted to be somebody big.
Yeah, that he wanted it.
This is why the word istikbar. Istikbar means trying so hard to look
the
big part. To look big.
Yeah.
To look great.
To look the
and
role,
you know what?
Yeah.
Okay, at this point, I should say this. Mm. You know what the biggest claim of Imam Khomeini was? The claim
Please.
Shaped into the slogan of what we know as Allahu Akbar.
Yes.
God is great.
That is the claim.
When God is great, you are nothing. When you are attached with what he wants you to be, where he wants you to be, how he wants you to be, then you become big. And nobody can deal with you.
Exactly.
That's why Imam Khomeini says America cannot do a damn thing.
Because he's attached to the greatest of
all.
And
at this point, it wasn't a slogan. Mm. It wasn't
a
claim.
No, that is a reality.
And that wasn't a claim. That was a reality.
That is a
that
reality.
That was a mere fact. Mm. As we speak. Mm. See?
Yeah.
You have to distinguish as we go along.
Sure.
As we proceed to talk about that great personality... So from the claim comes something that people think is claim, but it's not.
No,
it is a slogan. It's a motto.
Exactly.
So but that's the whole thing. He lived according to his belief.
Exactly.
He wasn't.
And
playing.
The belief comes straight out of the Quran.
Exactly. So and the power comes from that.
Yeah. So tell us from the Quran in terms of these claims, which, as you say. The attachment is with Allahu Akbar, and that's how the revolution started. Mm-hmm. That was the shouting on the streets.
And you know the deeper explanation of the slogan Allahu Akbar. The mere translation is God is great, which is true.
True.
But they ask Ma'asum, what does it mean?
Mean? Yes, please.
He said something to the fact that Allah is greater than whatever you can imagine.
Imagine.
That's a belief.
That is something.
Brother,
else.
The phenomenon, the issue of belief is a very serious one.
And Imam Khomeini proved
that. Khomeini proved that he was pro this ideology.
Exactly.
He didn't just say it. The difference between ordinary people like myself with Imam is this. Whatever he said, he didn't say it, you know.
He acted it.
He didn't say it for something to sound good.
Yeah.
To attract population.
Yeah.
He meant it. He believed it. He lived. He lived according to his belief. So this is the difference.
Yeah,
and you see the end result. Mm. Another thing, you have a criteria, a good check and balance system, you can tell by the end result. You asked me something about communism in the previous program.
Yeah.
But you see, after the demise, the collapse of Soviet Union, what happened? Somebody might ask.
Yeah.
What happened? Mm. It was that zero. But during the course of history, time, another thing with people, you know, ordinary people.
Sure.
Who don't stick to Quranic teaching, a deep understanding of Islam.
Yes.
What Islam wants to make out of you. This is very important.
Yes.
Those who used to see the military parade in the Red Square with all how many... great numbers of tanks and machineries and troops and cannons and this and that.
Missiles, yes. Ballistic
and
missiles.
Every year, the whole thing was a different show.
Sure, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Showmanship. People who saw that, they thought this material, this so-called power, this is not the real power. This so-called thing could help whoever the regime might be. But we saw the end result. It didn't help.
Not at all.
You see? this is what we're talking about. You're talking about religious in a true sense. You're talking about God commands in a true sense, do's and don'ts. The entire life of human being could be shaped, put on the right track, okay?
Sure.
If he listens to his own creator. By the way, I gave you this example in the last program.
Sure.
Only Sony can write a manual for its own product, not Sanyo.
That's right. That's right.
Okay? And God is the only one who can write this manual, and he did.
Mm.
The perfect one, which is Quran, through his prophets. And the story goes on with Imam Khomeini. When he said that America cannot do anything, this was not a claim. This was a fact.
Yeah.
Claim is to a certain point. When you get on the right track, you just continue to march. And you don't even look you don't look behind yourself.
That's right. And the other...
Because
the
you believe in it. This is a straight path.
As you see, the claim was very great at the beginning of the revolution. But it was also the claim that Islam made right from the outset.
And you know the reason for claim? To call on people.
To call on people.
This is a divine duty.
Yeah. It's, as you say, this claim is a reality in terms of calling people, that God is great, Allahu Akbar. And then we had in this particular context, because of course Islam has to answer to every century.
Right. And you know, one of the famous saying of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, at the beginning of Islam, at the beginning of invitation, he said, Hulu, all of you say.
Hmm.
He didn't say Muslim say this.
No, he said all Hulu, of you say.
All of it, see? All. For the entire globe.
Hmm.
La ilaha illallah. There is no, there is no God but him.
Hmm.
What happens? Tuflu, the salvation is yours. As simple as that.
That.
So can you imagine one person, by the way, prophet, even prophets, apostles, messengers of Allah did not see themselves as one.
No.
They saw themselves as that zero we were talking about.
Exactly. And I'm just saying that, you know, when they say, as Imam Khomeini, this great personality, put those words back on our lips again, reminding us. And this is the thing about Quran, isn't it? You go through its chapters and you're told, remember.
Let me tell you a story.
Yeah. Before you do, Doctor, just to let me finish this point, where he says that he's pointing out not the fact that, as I say, in terms of numbers, that there's no other God, that we are counting a whole range of gods. That's not what we're talking about. He's just saying that this is the only reality. And that's why this next slogan that came up in the revolution was, neither east nor west. You know?
Exactly.
So, we're not talking about
this
points
of exactly
a compass.
This is exactly like Prophet said. Yeah. Just say there is no God but Allah.
Yeah.
No east, no west. The story is this. You know, every ideology has an enemy. This is natural.
That's true.
Okay?
True.
And the ideology behind the establishment of the Islamic Republic of Iran is Islam. This is a fact.
Fact.
Some people don't like it. We're not going to get into the reason.
No, no.
I mean, this is natural.
That's just natural.
There is not even one single government on this planet
that
the entire globe is agree with them.
Yeah.
Having said that,
sure.
Naturally, we have enemies. But the funny thing I'm going to refer to, you're going to get the punchline in a second.
Sure.
The thing is this. Back in a couple of years ago, during the disturbance, the least you can say, the fitna of 88, they used to use the same tool that revolutionary did against Shah, reciting the slogan of Allahu Akbar, but it backfired. A couple days ago, I saw in media that we don't believe in Allahu Akbar. Why you said it? It backfired on us. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
I make the whole story short. This Allahu Akbar, this God is great, is not from the same gender.
No.
From the same nature. It's
no,
not.
No.
So you have to believe in what you say.
Yes. That's a hypocrisy.
That's
actually
hypocrisy, exactly.
Right.
And you draw a good conclusion, a correct one.
Mm.
To say God is great, but begging U.S. government to help you out.
Help you out.
I mean, that's hypocrisy.
not quite the same.
First
Allah
of all,
Akbar,
the claim has to be genuine.
Genuine.
You have to back it with your action.
Yes.
You have to sacrifice for it. You have to struggle for it.
Yes.
And then again, the story goes on. Imam Khomeini's personality of this kind.
Yes.
A divine man.
That's right. And because divine, meaning that he's the one who's actually waking us up to the fact that the reality is Allahu Akbar, but he himself is living every moment and every breath of his life to be with that Allahu Akbar. So in that sense, when he was saying neither east nor west,
he meant it.
He meant it.
And he did a stick behind
and,
it.
And Washington and Moscow, they also got the message that he really means it. Because the others were also saying, you know, we have the non-aligned movement. We've even got the summit happening at this very moment. What's the non-aligned movement? And that was the kind of thing that we're away from all these superpowers. But is that the reality?
You have to give them credit, the media, the Western media. I have to give them this, you know. Yeah. I remember back then,
yeah.
I'm talking about 30-some years ago.
Sure.
They were talking about Imam Khomeini. I don't remember exactly. It was Newsweek or something. You know, explaining Imam Khomeini.
Yeah.
What kind of personality he is. What kind of influence he had over people because of the belief.
Yeah.
You know what they said about him? He said, Khomeini is a person that his word is law. Think about that.
Yeah.
And that law, that validity comes from the source. Remember, in one program we were talking about the source.
Sure.
The pure source.
Yeah.
The pure source is Quran, Quranic teaching.
Yes.
He knew Quran. He believed in Quran.
Quran.
He acted upon it.
Yes. Yes. I was going to put it in the sense that, you know, in the 50s and 60s, you know, the non-aligned movement was about as non-aligned as, you know, a skewed line drawn on a paper.
As good as it could get.
But in this context, you know, with this summit happening in Tehran, it bears witness to this great personality's effect that really and truly they've got to be neither east nor west. And they're waking up to that fact, so that we're having this in the context now where people are beginning to see that there has to be some kind of alternative reality in the face of what we've been seeing since the beginning of the 20th century.
That is true. Let me explain another concept. We keep saying divine man.
Yes.
What does it mean?
Yeah.
The way I see Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him,
sure,
is from the understanding of Quran. Remember at the beginning of the creation,
sure,
God told all the angels, and by the way, Satan was not part of the angel.
No.
He was among them.
He was among them.
Okay.
He was an archangel by definition.
Exactly. So God is telling all the angels, you know, to begin, say, look, I am going, listen to the word carefully.
Sure.
We have to be careful when you do a research, when you do a study, when you do a real thinking. You have to give the word its own value.
Yeah.
You don't have to distort it.
No.
You don't have to go astray. You have to carefully study the word.
Yeah.
God told him, I am putting...
You have to be precise about it.
You have to be precise about it. Especially when it comes to Quranic understanding.
Sure, sure.
He says something to the fact that inni, most surely I, God is speaking, inni ja'ilun fil arzi khalifa. I am putting, not I am going. He didn't say ja'altu or aj'alu. Ja'ilun.
Ja'il.
For those brothers and sisters who are familiar with the Arabic word, it tells you a news that's something I'm doing right now, and I'm going to continue constantly.
It. Constantly.
I am putting a khalifa on the planet. Khalifa means successor.
Successor.
Having said this, well, the angels, in my opinion, you know, this is a very delicate and sensitive issue when you talk about commentary on Quran.
Yes.
But we study these words, when they question... Not in a negative way. They want to know.
Well, yeah.
When they question, why are you putting somebody on earth that constantly is going to commit bloodshed. Sin and corruption.
Corruption.
But if they listen carefully, they wouldn't raise this question this way,
Wait.
Brother Ejaz.
Yes.
They would say it differently.
Mm.
Because God didn't say, I'm going to put somebody.
No.
Some kind of human or whatever the name might be.
Mm.
He said, I am putting a successor. Listen to the word, Khalifa.
Yes.
Deputy.
Deputy.
Deputy. Mm. When you deputize something,
mm.
what he's supposed to do? Does the same thing that
the God wants
him to do. Having said that, in order to understand Quran is more than 6,000 different verses.
Of course
you have to put them in a collective way. In a comprehensive way, in a broad way, in a general. You have to put all the pieces together. This is what tadabbur, real deep understanding of Quran, suggests to do that.
Yes.
In order to put them in perspective, later on in chapter Ar-Rahman, describing himself, God, remember that. He says, "Kulli yawmin huwa fi shan." Every, and yom doesn't mean the 24-hour cycle.
No.
It doesn't mean the daylight.
No.
Kulli yawm in Arabic, it means any moment.
Any moment.
Any given moment of time.
Time.
Any moment, he, huwa, he, him, the same God,
sure,
the only one.
Sure.
Huwa fi shanin, he's doing something important.
My
shan. Shan is not any kind of job. Again, this is very important. Yes. I have to repeat this.
Sure.
Then I have to emphasize, I have to underline, I have to, because I'm trying to draw
underscore
a conclusion,
yeah,
to understand.
Yeah.
Okay? Kulli yawmin huwa fi shan. Any given moment, he, Allah, is doing something important, something worth of, talking. So, what the Khalifa is supposed to do, what the successor is supposed to do,
and exactly
what's the relevant understanding of this with the life of Imam Khomeini?
Exactly.
Peace be on him.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
It's this. That when you say divine, you're not something in vacuum.
No.
You're not talking about something imaginary.
No.
You're not saying something, to feel good.
Yes.
No. You say that he was caring about the entire mankind. When he says no east, no west, he was doing something important. When he was telling us,
because mankind needs a guide.
But mankind needs to be guided.
To be guided
on a
constant basis.
So kulla yawmin, as a successor, as a deputy, as somebody noble,
and
I can use so many different criteria.
And only a true successor.
A true successor
is going to enable us to do this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he was doing something important.
Sure.
You know, when that Salman Rushdie incident happened,
he did
something important.
Mm.
You know, something very important according to true do's and don'ts of Islam. Because he knew Islam.
Exactly.
He studied Islam.
Yes.
He did his own research. He did his homework.
Yeah.
He did his duty. He was Imam before. I said this before, and I have to say it again. He was Imam even during the 15 of Khordad, even though we didn't call him Imam.
Yes.
And the society had to go through different phases in order to understand
acknowledge this
who's
reality.
Who.
Yeah.
To understand who's the friend, who's
not.
Sure. Okay? And this is what we're talking about. Divine man. Yes,
divine,
he was.
Yes.
Indeed, he was.
Was.
You know, because there is a famous saying of Imam Khomeini.
Yes, I'm going to get to that.
He's doing good as far as the leadership of the Islamic Republic for us.
Yes. But he says that the revolution can't be understood
without the name of Khomeini.
Imam Khomeini.
He means it. Because he was it. To give him the credit of Imam Khomeini.
Yes.
Okay, that's another subject.
Yes.
But hey, another way to see the great people, look what kind of students they have.
They have.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, you bring me back to that beautiful moment in the school of Ahlul Bayt where Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam was met by a very competent scholar from the Muslim world who had questions, and he wanted to pose them to the Imam, but the Imam said, not that he was refusing his questions.
No need to.
He just simply said, please ask my students.
Exactly.
And if they don't satisfy you, then
you
come to me.
And Imam Khomeini says something very valuable, precious, important, and significant with regard to the personality, the great personality of Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him.
Yes.
He said that this revolution, meaning the Islamic revolution of Iran, is not known in the entire globe without the name of Khomeini. And that's true. And we can talk about this again.
So thanks very much for that, Dr. Hassani. Honestly, on that note, we'll finish this session. And hopefully in the next session, we're going to look at the context of Iran, particularly in terms of its region, in terms of globally.
We have to get to more issues.
More issues. And then look at, again, this divine personality, how he has really impacted on the complete reversal of the role that Iran had in the past, as opposed to what it is today. But thanks, listeners, for listening to our program, The Man Who Changed the World. I hope you enjoyed it, this session today.
And it still is.
And still is, as Dr. Hassani says. But I want to thank him for this session and for his valuable contribution on the program. And God willing, we'll see you in the next session very soon. May the peace and mercy of Allah be upon you all. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Shaheed. Though 2 years have passed since the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, but the attacks on his personality haven't yet stopped. Since the beginning of the Syrian crisis, the Western media propaganda was to manipulate the masses with clever disinformation about Shia-Sunni conflict in order to create a barbaric image of him. They portrayed him as a villainous Iranian Shia general who wanted to murder, loot, and conquer the Sunni Arab world. But what really was his outlook about the Sunni community? I am Sarbazullah Rizvi, and in this episode of The Shaheed, we will look into his experience with the Sunnis, his standpoints on sectarian conflicts. You want to find out what he really was looking for in the region. Stay tuned. Member of Arab and Muslims Relations Office and representative of Islamic Resistance Movement of Hamas in Tehran, Dr. Khaled Qaddoumi, thank you for accepting our invitation. And salam alaikum. The first question, we all know that the propaganda against General Qasem Soleimani not only stopped but also accelerated after his assassination, his criminal assassination by United States. You, as someone who is representing the resistance movement of Palestine in Tehran, at the heart of Iran, should have been in contact with General Qasem Soleimani closely. What was the attitude of General Qasem Soleimani about this dynamic of Sunni Shias, by which nowadays we are observing that he's being portrayed in a wrong way again and again by mainstream media?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First of all, in our theme of thinking, we always believe that if you have been killed or assassinated by the enemy, then you are definitely an enemy to that enemy. So hence the winning of the battle with General Soleimani rahmatullah alayh is that he has been assassinated by the hand of the, I would say, absolute hegemonic and barbaric forces in the world, that is the American forces. And that is the Zionist American ally. That is one. Second thing, I would like to remember or retrieve some of those memories of 10 years I spent in the Islamic Republic of Iran, where I was honored to meet the Martyr Soleimani many times.
Indeed.
He was away from being Sunni or Shia. He was the man of Quran. He was the man who always resort to the verses of the Holy Quran whenever he wants to augment his idea or his response to an opinion, or he wants to elaborate on something. So Quran and the verses of Quran were always there, and he always tried to take benefit of those interpretation of those verses of Quran. Now, when we talk about the narratives of hadith of our Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he used always to resort to those narratives which they are combinedly accepted by Sunni and Shia. Third thing, I personally and my movement never felt that we are talking to a man who is emphasizing the differences creed-wise. Well, in one hand, let me tell you that General Soleimani, rahmatullah alayh, was a pure and to the depth of his heart, a Muslim following Ahlul Bayt and the Shia sect of Islam. That is, should have no doubt on that. But that never been a burden to him or to us to talk to each other. That was never a barrier to on dialogue or on relation between us. Rather, he used to make you feel at home. He used to make you feel that he is resorting to those common ground, to those gray areas which we used to live together. That is third. Fourth thing, his way of living in the Palestinian issue was calling the roles of every Muslim, every component of resistance, school of thought in the region, in the Palestinian issue, asking the Iraqis, the Iranian, the Lebanese, the Yemenis, the Palestinian in different school of thought, what are you going to do to Palestine? What are you going to do to safeguard the legitimate right of the Palestinian, the first Qibla of Muslimin? This was General Soleimani rahmatullah alayh. He is a pure believer of Islam. He was resorting to the Holy Quran and its verses. He was a pure Shia, but he was never allowing his sectarian belief to be a barrier between him and other brothers. Rather, on the opposite, as I said, he used to call for what is the role and what is the function of every component of this Muslim Ummah,
yeah,
to safeguard Palestine, Al-Quds, Masjid Al-Aqsa. This is what we knew about.
I remember one of the speeches which was really interesting for me personally, I'm speaking, where Shahid General Qasem Soleimani is talking about Palestine, then he's telling that Palestine is a 99% Sunni-dominated Muslim country. I mean, there may be very limited number of Shias over there in Palestine, but they are very limited. And then General Soleimani, something really important, I want to have you stand on that. He said, even if there is going to be a Shia movement in Palestine, we are not going to work with them. We are going to work with the Sunnis. What's your stand on that, and how do you look to that?
Well, listen, very, very, very straightforward. For any reputable and respectable project, like the school of thought of General Qasem Soleimani, he will be having components and pillars of his identity. One of major identity is his beliefs, cultural-wise, religion-wise, sect-wise, whatever.
Indeed.
That is, you have to deal with that. I mean, I am proud to say that I have lived with him the time he was different to me. He was never making us to feel that he's different from us. Rather, as I have said, that we are together. One. Second thing, there is no phenomena that we have felt or that we have witnessed in Hamas or in Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement that say that General Qasem Soleimani or even the Revolutionary Guard have tried to impose the sectarian beliefs on our society. Our society, as you have said, it has 99.9, maybe 100%, they are Sunnis. Many of them, they are of Shafi'i followers. On the other hand, we are more than 96-97% have enjoying 97% education rate. So it's not easy to say that you are talking to some emotional yes. nation, so that you can enjoy the liberty of changing their own sect or something like
exactly.
that. If at all, I would like accept the notion of playing in the Palestinian ground. We are solid in that thing. On the other hand, as I have said, we have never experienced any endeavor or have seen that there is a phenomena that Hajj Qasim rahmatullah alayhi or his brothers in the Islamic Republic, they wanted to impose any Islamic or religious belief on our society.
Very important point. We will pursue our talk with Dr. Khaled Qaddoumi after watching a part about the feedback of Muslim scholars on the demise and on the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani. Stay with us.
Not much on allegations of Iran's crusade to create a Shia crescent here. General or Sardar Soleimani, chief of Iran's Quds Force, is predominantly remembered as a military genius fighting for and beside Shia and Sunni equally in the fight against Daesh terror. In 2018, Soleimani visited Umm al-Tabwil Mosque in Baghdad, where he met the Sunni Mufti Sheikh Mahdi al-Sumaidi. The greatest resistance against 2003 U.S. occupation of Baghdad emanated from that mosque. And Soleimani's visit resonated in social media as a show of unity in a united Shia-Sunni resistance. As for Soleimani's stance towards Sunni-Shia unity, as he put it 6 years ago, I summarize, what blame the Islamic Republic of Iran and its IRGC force bear is for defending our Sunni brothers. The small-minded, scare Sunnis of Shias, whereas the greatest harm to Sunni communities has come from Takfiris, that's false Muslim sects created by the Western enemy. Why shouldn't Iran stand against a group that trade 2,000 young women among themselves or stand against non-Muslims out to destroy mosques and Muslim centers? Name one country where Iran might have tried to convert Sunnis to Shia. That was an answer to political and media efforts to turn Sunni neighbors against predominantly Shia Iran. Hujjatul Islam Ismail Saadat has been the leader's representative in the Quds Force for years. He bears witness to what distaste the general had for emboldening anything different between Sunni and Shia. A clerical student had attempted to propagate the Shia sect of Islam among Sunnis in Syria, but Haj Qasem said, "Return him to Iran. We don't need such limited folk here." Also, in an Arabic letter to a Syrian household who hosted him during his Free Abu Kamal operation, he wrote, "I am Sunni in a way, as I believe in the Sunnah or way of the Prophet, and you are Shia in a way, as you love the descendants of the Prophet." Now, domestically, General Soleimani, or Haj Qasem, as fans and followers affectionately call him, did something really clever or forward-thinking. He created a Sunni division in the Sar Allah battalion. As for an example of what Sunni Iranian religious leaders had to say of the martyr, Maulavi Abdul Hamid of Sistan Balochistan province is regarded as a spiritual leader to Iran's Sunni population. He lamented days after the Soleimani assassination by a U.S. drone, "There are few in the world in possession of military skills and experiences such as those of General Qasem Soleimani." Kurdish Iranian Sunni religious leaders believe that Haj Qasem is no less popular with Sunni Muslims than Shia Muslims, given his great services to the region's Sunnis. The people will never forget the sacrifices made by him, General of Hearts. World Sunni leaders were of like mind. Maulana Fazlur Rahman is Pakistan's current president of the Jamiat Ulama-e-Islam faction. He said that the Americans proved they are in pursuit of adventurism and sparking new wars in the region. And now they have assassinated General Qasem Soleimani under the pretext of fighting terror. Iraq's Sunni cleric society didn't sit back. Its chief contributed at the Soleimani commemoration. Liaghat Baluch, deputy to Pakistan's Islamic Society faction Jamaat-Islami, also showed his appreciation by describing Soleimani as a valiant fighter for the faith who sacrificed his life for the freedom of Jerusalem al-Quds. Not to forget Iranian Sunnis fighting in Syria, a good reference and reminder would be the documentary A Child of Iran on the martyr Salman, one of Sunni Iranians martyred in Syria. On a final note, the leader of the revolution paid a call on families who'd lost their sons in Syria, one of them a Sunni family, not to make an issue of it. Although Ayatollah Khamenei did stress the importance of a Sunni Iranian presence in Syria.
In the Shaheed special program on the second martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, I'm talking to Dr. Khaled Qadoumi, representative of Hamas in Tehran. Dr. Qadoumi, in the first part of our conversation, you talked about the feelings and the importance that General Qasem Soleimani was feeling towards Al-Quds Jerusalem and Palestine. Specifically speaking, what was his, you know, sentiments towards the first Qibla of Muslims, the primary Qibla of Muslims? I'm talking specifically about the Jerusalem Al-Quds. Palestine itself has different dimensions, but we all know that at the heart of the Palestinian cause, we have the issue of Al-Quds Jerusalem. And what was the feeling of, as a Muslim, as you mentioned that Sheikh Soleimani was a Quranic man, was a man who was believing Quran and practicing Quran. And what was his feelings towards the first Qibla of Muslimin, Jerusalem Al-Quds?
Let me just elaborate on that. I mean, when we talk about Sheikh Soleimani, we are not talking about a nominal figure. He is one of the engineers of policies in the region. He is also a school of thought. So he is multi-dimensional personality. So let me just correct that it's not feeling and it's not sentiment. It's something that he is obsessed by.
And witnessly,
I would like to recall the last meeting with him, rahmatullah alayh, which it was when we have visited the Supreme Leader, maybe a few weeks or a month after his assassination and his martyrdom.
Before his
and
assassination.
And he was with us. We were with the Supreme Leader over here in Tehran, and Haj Qasim, rahmatullah alayh, and his brothers in Revolutionary Guard were hosting a top delegation of Hamas head by Sheikh Saleh Al-Aruri, the existing vice of the movement. I would recall the last idea and the last project which was given or was engineered and articulated by Sheikh Soleimani in the presence of Supreme Leader, where the Supreme Leader himself was really taking it very seriously, and we have understood what is Shaheed Soleimani is all about and what is he thinking about. And that idea simply was, what will be the combined project of all components of the resistance axis in the region to contribute to defend the Palestinian Masjid al-Aqsa and al-Quds and to confront the Zionist regime and the Israeli crimes. And that was not a sentiment. That was an elaborated project where there were questions and answers among all of us, including His Eminent, the Supreme Leader. And that indicates actually two things. One, why he was assassinated? Because whenever you want to think of any serious project in the region, any unity project in the region,
you will find
why he was assassinated, why he was targeted, because whenever you want to look for the point which wants to unite all of us on Palestine, to unite all of efforts to confront the common enemy of the Ummah, which is the Zionist regime, you will find Shahid Soleimani. That is one point. The second point, that Shahid Soleimani was not only distributing some lip services or sentiments or playing with our feelings. No, he offered his soul for this reason, for this cause. That is the Palestinian cause. This, irrespective of whatever being said in the region or in the international about the paradox which you have mentioned or the propaganda, I am witnessing what we have seen, what we have touched, what we have felt, what we have experienced about this Shaheed. that he was, to the depth of his heart, committed to the cause of Palestine more than any other cause, because simply he understood what is the crux of the unity among Muslim Ummah. What is the point which can focus, which can attract all the efforts with differences of sect and differences of school of thoughts among the Ummah, and among also the free voices in the international level, and that is the Palestinian issue. We have lost a man who is a multi-dimensional brother to the resistance. He used to advise us, offer us military expertise, diplomatic expertise, religious expertise, and he was having a holistic approach the time when he is talking about Palestine, in a way that I was telling you that in that last meeting, with the attraction of attention of His Eminence, the Supreme Leader, and all resistance figures from Hamas who were attending that meeting, that how all of us in Muslim Ummah should leave our all differences, should leave our all marginal fights in different levels and in different fields away from the major issue and focus on the major issue, and that is Palestine and Al-Quds. That was General Sulaiman Rahmatullah.
Indeed. Thank you, Dr. Khaled Qadoumi, representative of Islamic Resistance Movement of Hamas in Tehran and member of Arab and Muslims Office, Relations Office. Thank you for joining our discussion.
Barakallahu feekum.
Yes, this was my interview with Dr. Khaled Qadoumi, representative of Islamic Resistance Movement of Hamas in Tehran. We discussed about the belief, the real belief of General Qasem Soleimani to the unity of the Ummah, the one who was looking after unifying the Ummah to contribute what they should contribute for the main cause of Ummah, which is Palestine. Stay with us and follow us with the next part of our program, which is about, again, another personal dimension of the life of General Qasem Soleimani, a man with high spirituality. Stay with us.
Spirituality was a matter for both worlds to the general. Prayer brings peace and a closeness to God that makes his worshippers independent of anyone and anything else. It works as the guiding light that puts you on a path of righteousness and eventually carries you on into oneness with the Creator. This is General Soleimani's message in essence to compatriots and children of his martyred fellow compatriots. To him, prayer and reading the Quran was not just a ritual to bottle up till the next obligatory performance. It was to instill in worshippers a greater understanding and more fundamental worship of God, and hence greater disdain for the devil and false gods and oppressors. His was the Islam of the Prophet's household. That is, the Islam that teaches never to bow to bullying, but to apply your thought to wisdom. It is the original Islam, a doctrine to direct life and life-making. The Islam of knowledge and understanding, an Islam for the oppressed and deprived. Sheikh Khalid Mullah, a prominent Sunni Iraqi cleric, says, Haj Qasem Soleimani left his country behind to dwell in the desert, just to award Iraqis military advice on combating terrorism. He came to Iraq to protect Islam and Muslims, and he will go to Syria too. He practiced what he preached and advised compatriots powerful in the system to do the same. In the winter of 2010, he addressed a military crowd. Don't allow greed to take a hold of you, for whatever material goals and high positions you may gain are worthless. It were as if he didn't belong to this material plane. And it was this quality that kept him from pretense and boasting. The leader Ayatollah Khamenei recalls how the general just sat in a quiet corner at ordinary official meetings. It was such that if you needed him to bear witness or comment, you'd have to search for him. He kept away from the spotlight and never promoted himself. General Fallahzadeh says of Soleimani's spirituality, at the Aleppo Nasr base and Abu Kamal Sarallah base, he'd begin an hour before the morning prayer with night prayers. One night at the Nasr base, I heard him sobbing. I opened the door to find him at his prayer. He is his will to God. I am losing my abilities. How can you keep the gates to your heaven shut to someone waiting 40 years on your doorstep? O Creator, O Love, whom I have asked constantly to fill me with your love, burn me and destroy me in my separation from you. You know well that I love you and want none other. Make me as one with you. He preached what he believed and even practiced. In Comforting Children of Martyrs, this is what he wrote. To summarize, he told Fatima, the daughter of Mehdi Maghfouri, 5 years ago, "My girl, talking to God alone in solitude is the best tranquilizer." And to another martyr's daughter, he wrote a year earlier, "My girl, anyone who gets to know God is drawn to him, especially in prayer. This keeps him away from sin. Understanding God means subjugation and satisfaction. It makes you needless of any other person." A compatriot of his, Hujjatul Islam Sa'adat Nejad, says in summary, "Haj Qasim was one for voluntary night prayers. I often saw him murmuring the Abu Hamza prayer or reciting it during night prayers. In mourning the saints, his tears were uncontrollable. They even moved me to tears."
In this episode of The Shaheed, we discussed about the idea of unity, Islamic unity, and General Qasim Soleimani. An idea in which Shaheed Soleimani had a strong belief, not only a strong belief, but for which he sacrificed his whole life. Thank you for being with us. Wassalam.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Hello and welcome to another session of Q&A on Islamic beliefs. This is IRIB English Radio and I'm your host. We're going to discuss the animal rights. This is the following session of the two previous sessions. In this session, we're going to discuss about the right of living of the animals. Hello, Dr. Karimi.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. Okay, can you tell us about the riwayats that are of concerning the right of living for the animals?
Sure. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As I mentioned in the previous session, some narrations prevent people from killing any kind of animal, for no reason, of course. And in some narrations, some names of some animals are mentioned, or some birds, and I would like to share a few of them. For example, the Holy Prophet is quoted as saying, "Man qatala 'usfuran bighayri haqq," whoever kills a sparrow for no reason, God will question him on the Day of Judgment. Again, we are talking about killing the animals just for fun.
And with no reason.
With no reason. It's absolutely forbidden. In a very somehow powerful narration, which has a very, maybe a threatening tone, the Holy Prophet is quoted as saying that, "On the night of Mi'raj or Ascension, I passed by the hellfire. I saw a woman. She was tortured, punished, and I asked for the reason. And I was told that إنها ربطت هرة. She imprisoned a cat and didn't give it any kind of food or water, and did not leave it just to go looking for food and water. And finally, the cat died out of this kind of torture. This is the reason that she is punished right now by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Again, another narration referring to the fact that all the animals, according to the religion of Islam, have the right of life. Another interesting narration, the Holy Prophet says that if you kill a sparrow, the same animal on the Day of Judgment will come and addressing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that, Ya Rab, O Lord, this person killed me habatan, without any reason.
Yeah.
That means that if it was justified, then I would not complain. And yantafu bi, he did not take benefit from killing me and did not leave me to, look for food. So this is, again, another narration referring to the fact that all the animals have this right for sure. So this is, one point regarding the rights of the animal. The other point is that we know that for ablution we need some water. Now, and if we have no water, we need to perform tayammum. Now, the question is that imagine we have only, a glass of water. There is an animal which is thirsty and it is in need of that water, and we need to also perform wudu or ablution for prayer. Then according to the explicit verdict of Shia scholars, in that case you need to perform tayammum and give that water
to that animal.
Exactly. And this is one of the cases in which tayammum is permitted, or rather a kind of obligation. For example, Shahid Thani, the famous great Shia scholar, says that one of the cases in which you're allowed to perform tayammum is that there is a creature of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and it is thirsty, whether it is a human being or an animal. It doesn't make any difference.
Yes.
Now, having talked about some of these rights for animal, in the previous session I refer to some of the points when it comes to the slaughtering the animals. Although Islam permits and allows slaughtering for a couple of the animals, but Islam has many detailed instructions in this regard. For example, I refer to the fact that it is highly discouraged for people to slaughter animals at night.
So it's a process that has rules and does not happen haphazardly.
Exactly. There are etiquette for that. So let me just share one narration in this regard. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says that you have no right, of course it's makruh, to kill and slaughter the animals till early morning, because night is for resting, even for animals. Also, I mentioned that it is very discouraged for you to slaughter an animal in front of other animals. Imam Hadi alayhi salam says that لا تذبح الشاة عند الشاة, you shouldn't slaughter a sheep in front of another sheep. ولا الجذور عند الجذور, nor a camel in front of another camel. And interestingly, some Shia scholars, because of these narrations, they believe that it is forbidden. It's not only makruh, it's not only discouraged, it is forbidden to do that. For example, Sheikh At-Tusi is said to believe in this verdict, and this is his fatwa. The next point regarding slaughtering the animals is that according to Islamic and Shia jurisprudence, again, it is not recommended for you to peel. That means to remove the skin of the animal right after slaughtering that.
Yes.
Because it is believed that it is a kind of torture for the animal. Again, we have so many scholars, they have mentioned that according to some of them it is highly discouraged, and according to some it is even forbidden. For example, Fadl Hindi, a great Shia scholar, says that it seems to me that peeling the animals, removing the skin right after the slaughtering, it is absolutely forbidden. لَأَنَّهُ إِلَامٌ لِلْحَيْوَانِ بِلَا فَائِدَةٍ, because you are torturing the animal and there is no benefit in that. وَقَدْ نُهِيَ عَنْ تَعْذِيبِ الْحَيْوَانِ. The Imams of the Ahl-Bayt have prevented us from torturing the animals. So
they are caring about the smallest details.
Exactly.